You're listening to audio from Ascend Church. For more information about Ascend or to access more gospel-centered tools to grow as a disciple of Christ, visit ascendkc.org.
Well, let's grab our Bibles and turn to the book of Ecclesiastes. That's where we planted our flag a couple weeks ago, and that's where we will continue to rally over the weeks ahead as we march through this amazing book in the Old Testament. If you don't have a Bible, just look at the seats in front of you, and you will see that we have Bibles there. You can find Ecclesiastes on page 553 in those Bibles in the backs of the seats. Ecclesiastes is a book that oftentimes people look to find the meaning of life. And so especially in this day and age where there's a lot of philosophy as to what the meaning of life is, we would find Ecclesiastes to provide value to us. But over the last couple weeks, we've seen that it has even more value than just providing wisdom on the meaning of life. In fact, practically speaking, I have to be honest with you, I'm still on an emotional high that the Chiefs are the Super Bowl champions. And I remember watching this celebration, and just as a man and maybe just as a human being, I had a quick fantasy, and maybe some of you can relate to me on this, but I looked at that young man who is 24 years old by the name of Patrick Mahomes, and I just had a moment of reflection comparing where he is at 24 and comparing where I was at 24. And just thinking to myself, man, wouldn't it be nice to have been able to be at the top of the football world, to be on the precipice of making tens of millions, to be ultimately the Michael Jordan of the NFL at 24 years old. And it actually reminded me that there was another Patrick Mahomes who back in 2005, at 27 years old, was celebrating his third Super Bowl ring. And some of you may know who that is. That is Tom Brady. And what's interesting about Tom Brady is he was having an interview on 60 Minutes after he had won his third Super Bowl. And listen to this quote that Tom Brady made on that program. He said to the interviewer, "There's got to be more than this, hasn't there?" I mean, think about that. He was making, at that time, $6 million a year, which for me, that's a lot of money. He had his third Super Bowl ring. He wasn't even 30 years old. And the question that he was asking was, there's got to be something more than this, hasn't there? The interviewer responded and said, "Well, what is the answer?" And Tom responded by saying, "I don't know, and I wish I knew." See, beloved, we might not be interested in fantasies about Super Bowl rings because we look at ourselves in the mirror and we realize that will never happen. But I think that question that drove Tom Brady drives us as we look at our careers, as we look at where we live, as we look at our bank accounts, as we look at the relationships that we have or don't have, as we look at our children, as we look at all of the circumstances of our lives, I think we ask the question, there's got to be something more than this, hasn't there? As we make decisions of vacations, as we make decisions of where we'll go out to eat, we look to those events oftentimes as though they will be the end-all be-all, as though they will provide the satisfaction that nothing else has ever provided. And as we experience those circumstances, as we experience those pleasures, I think we are left asking the question that Tom Brady asked, and that is, there's got to be something more to this, hasn't there? And the answer usually sets above us this dark cloud. This dark cloud that keeps us from being able to see the sun of what the truth is. And it is that dark cloud that hangs over us that causes us to want to try more and more things to change our circumstances. And so what Solomon is going to provide for us in this passage this morning is an opportunity for Ecclesiastes to pierce those clouds. In fact, you can see the big idea in your notes. The massive clouds that are the storm of the, there's got to be something more to this, are pierced by the point of Ecclesiastes. Our outline this morning provides one long sentence that I believe you will be able to take with you and pierce the clouds of this never-ending question. Let's look at the beginning of the sentence with number one: we need to be taught by education. We need to be taught by education. It says in Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 12, I, the preacher, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem. Let's stop right there. What we see is that this section is an autobiography. Solomon is saying, I have experienced what I'm about to unpack, and that's very important. You see, book knowledge is valuable, and any time that you are instructed by somebody who is an expert from book knowledge, who is able to effectively teach something that they have learned, is extremely valuable, but it's also extremely valuable to learn from someone who has actually experienced what they're teaching. And that is what Solomon is conveying. He has experienced what he's about to unpack. Look at verse 13. He says, I applied my heart to seek and search out. Now, the Hebrew terms that are translated, the way the English Standard Version translates this, means that what Solomon did is set in motion something that would stay in motion. In other words, he was saying, I'm all in on what I'm about to explain. It reminds me of when we were in Austin, Texas. My family was on a boat with some dear friends of ours, and our friends were telling us, they who lived in Austin, that there was this cliff that we would see in this cove. This cliff was about 30 feet above the water, and that it was tradition and exhilarating that you just go up to this cliff and you run and you jump off, and it's an awesome experience. Well, I am deathly afraid of heights. And yet I climbed to that 30-foot precipice, and I took with me our 7-year-old daughter. I remember she was excited, and she held Daddy's hands, and there was this anticipation of, this is going to be awesome, this is going to be great. And we stepped back, and I held her hand, and we ran and we jumped. And about halfway down, there were two emotions going on. My 7-year-old daughter was thinking to herself, I will never trust my dad again. And I was thinking to myself, I will never trust myself again. But in that moment of being halfway down, I realized there was no going back. I was all in. The wheels were set in motion, and it was going to happen. And that's what Solomon is saying here, is he was all in. He applied his entire life, his heart, his emotions, his will, his efforts to accomplish something. What was he intending to accomplish? Well, verse 13 says he was searching out by wisdom. By wisdom. The word wisdom is found all throughout the Bible, especially in the book of Proverbs. And usually what it means is that this is biblical wisdom or God-induced wisdom. But wisdom, by very definition, is simply knowledge applied. In fact, this Hebrew term means to have technical skill or aptitude. Meaning that you take the knowledge that you've gained and you actually apply it as an expert. What makes knowledge wisdom is the application, effective application of it. So what Solomon is saying here is, I'm not just interested in learning information. I'm wanting to learn information to become an expert at it, to be able to apply it to life, to be able to teach others. But the next phrase is so important. I'm searching out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. This is that phrase that we've become familiar with, even in the initial study of this book. Under heaven, under the sun, what he's saying is, here on earth, the experience that is all of us as human beings. And his conclusion in verse 13 is that it is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. What he's speaking about specifically here is learning. It's education. It's gathering information for the purpose of applying it. And he's saying that it is busyness, it is toil, it is over and over and over again. We are constantly busy with learning, aren't we? Not just formal education, Not just people who get done with one degree and then begin to pursue another. Nobody would ever do that, right? My wife would say, yeah, preach to yourself. But learning and education is just part of life. In fact, I think back to my childhood. My parents are here today, and I remember that in my early days growing up, it was my dad that I went to teach me about learning how to use tools and how to set my new watch up and to be able to understand how that when I took my Walkman headphones and tried to plug it into the receiver, there was a bigger hole there, and so there had to be an adapter. And I learned all of that from my dad. But then as the years have gone on, guess who has been teaching him how to use his new iPhone and his laptop and his TV? And what's fascinating about that is that my kids are now teaching me about the new apps, and my 9-year-old is an expert on our TV system. And my point is learning is a repetitive cycle. We are constantly learning. There's constantly something new. And what does he say the reality of this is? Look at verse 14. I've seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, it is vanity. It is hebel. Remember, this is that term that we will see over and over again in Ecclesiastes. And the word hebel means it is smoke. It does not last. There's not ongoing substance to it. This is hebel. He illustrates that in verse 15. He says, what is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. All he's doing here is giving a proverb. It's a general truth that if you look at it and you test it over and over again, it's true. And what he's saying is that there are some things that cannot be answered. There are some problems that do not have a solution. And again, you might be looking at this and saying, well, no, Pastor, if you just knew me, I'm the kind of person that I will figure it out. And there's value to that. But at the end of the day, there are some problems that just cannot be solved. And we need to be okay with that. In fact, in his book, I Still Do, Dave Harvey has a chapter where he says that resolution is overrated. Coming to conclusions is overrated. Yes, we strive to find answers, but there must be a point where we are okay with saying, I just don't have an answer. He says that he continued to gather education. Verse 16, I have said in my heart, I have acquired great wisdom. Verse 17, he applied his heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. The point that he is making here is that he's not leaving any stone unturned. It's easy for us to study things that we can grasp, study things that we understand, and to shut out all the other things. This happens in the church, doesn't it? It happens with theology. We become experts on our position. And our knowledge of the other positions is simply we read our position's view of the other things. Solomon is saying, no, I've studied from everyone about everything. And then he says, my education surpassed all. What was his conclusion about education? Look at verse 18. For in much wisdom and in increasing in knowledge, there is much vexation and there is only an increase in sorrow. What does he mean by that? He means that as we pile on the degrees, as we read multiple books, as we read the blogs of experts, as we put knowledge in and increase in wisdom, we draw a conclusion that there's always something more. Beloved, what do we do with this? Is the only natural and logical response, we'll just throw education out the door? And I know all the students would say, amen, Pastor. And all the teachers would say, no. Well, there's a dot, 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 and that's why we must continue the sentence of our outline for this passage, which leads us to number two. Be taught by education and by pleasures. And by pleasures. That's what Solomon's about to unpack. In fact, he's about to give a documentary, as it were, of his life experiences. I love watching documentaries, especially of the rich and famous. I love reading the stories behind music lyrics. In fact, listen to this music lyric by U2 featuring Johnny Cash. It's the song called The Wanderer. It says, I went out there in search of experience, to taste and to touch and to feel as much as a man can before he repents. And friends, I think that's often what, especially in those early years of life, people do. I think that's what the rich and famous tend to do. They tend to go out and try to experience and to taste and to touch and to feel as much until one would have to repent. And Solomon is saying, I'm going to pursue pleasures and experiences in life. But listen, beloved, what often happens when we watch these documentaries is we usually soothe our own conscience by saying, I would never do that. Have you ever done that? You see the entertainers that become addicts. You see the famous people who have multiple spouses because they just could not find contentment. And you say to yourself, I would never do that. Let me just say as a pastor and to myself that whatever you put at the end of that sentence, I would never do that, beware. Because you are one horrible decision away from doing exactly that. And so here's what Solomon's saying is, I tried all of that. And he gets really real. Look what he says. Let's just go through these very quickly. Verse 2, he says, of laughter. He pursued laughter. Looking at comedy. Maybe watching Netflix. And isn't it interesting that some of the most famous comedians of the world, when you study their lives, were actually some of the most depressed. He tried laughter. Verse 3 says he tried wine. Verse 14, he had great works of building, which, by the way, let's just put ourselves back in that historical context. If you've ever built a home or built a church, you realize it takes oftentimes a long time. And when you're excited about the end result, it can take an even longer amount of time. But just understand the works that Solomon built. In fact, 1 Kings tells us that it took 20 years for him to have the temple and his own palace built. This was a beautiful and massive complex. It says in verse 15, he amassed gardens, which, by the way, you might say, well, I have a garden, Pastor, and I don't think that's so great. Well, if you've ever been to Israel, you know that's an arid and desert climate. There's a lot of earth tones as you look around, a lot of beige, a lot of grays, a lot of browns. And so to have a garden of beautiful green and beautiful, luscious colors of contrast, this would have been amazing and extravagant and magnificent, and you would have had to water it. It says in verse 6, he made pools to water these gardens. Verse 7, he said he had male servants and female servants. In fact, the English translates it slaves, which, by the way, let me just explain something very quickly. We live in a society where, tragically, our history of slavery is a horrible mark on our history. And so we might see this and say, what were you doing, Solomon? Well, in the ancient culture, it was a little bit different and it was the same. It was different in that this was just part of their economics. This was part of military conquest. As you defeated a people, you brought them into servitude and they worked for you. And yes, in this ancient context, there were those who abused their slaves. But God, even in his instruction in the Old Testament, exhorted his people that if you're going to have slaves, if you're going to have people who work for you, you still treat them kindly. You still treat them in a way that reminds them and you that they are human beings made in the image of God. So let me just make sure we understand God's view of slavery. But also look what the passage intentionally says. He says in verse 7, I bought male and female slaves. I also had slaves who were born into my house. What is he saying there? He's saying that these were efforts that he made to purchase these individuals, not by military conquest. What's important about that is that the Jews that were the original audience would have understood that this was a time of unmatched peace in Israel's history. In fact, 1 Kings tells us in chapter 4 and verse 24 and 25, there were no wars. On every side of the nation, there was peace. This was rare in the ancient world. He goes on to say in verse 7 that he had herds and flocks, which this would have provided food. It would have provided more income for the palace, but it would have also provided entertainment. In fact, you can read through 1 Kings and see that the animals that he amassed were not just the traditional animals of the Middle East. He brought in peacocks. He brought in monkeys and exotic animals. He amassed every type of animal for every type of purpose that a human being could amass animals. Verse 8 says that he amassed silver and gold, which is interesting. 1 Kings 10, verse 27 says that he made silver as plentiful as stones. This was an amazing amount of wealth. He amassed in verse 8 entertainers. And in verses 7 and 9 says he surpassed everyone who had gone before him. Verse 10 says whatever his eyes desired, he did not keep from himself. This man experienced everything that a human being could fantasize about. And friends, you may say, well, I don't have a discretionary income that allows me to be able to see something and get it. Most of us don't, but I think we can relate to what Solomon was saying. Consider these statistics. A study shows that we spend as Americans over $100 a month streaming subscription services. And in 2016, Netflix offered 4,335 movies, 1,197 shows. We have access to so much entertainment. In fact, another study says that average Americans spend 4.5 hours a day watching some sort of videos, 3 hours on smartphones. Add to that 7 hours of sleep and 8 hours of work each day, and we are left with 1.5 hours to interact with another human being. Then if you add to that working out, or you add another hour to your 7 hours of sleep, you see that we have very little amount of time in our lives to have intentional, meaningful interactions with other human beings. And what we do with that time is we soothe our conscience, we numb our questioning of there's got to be more, and we immerse ourselves in these experiences of life. But I think you will agree with what Solomon says, that all of this amassing ends up with the conclusion of Hebel. It's simply smoke. It doesn't last. It doesn't have substance. It doesn't satisfy. In fact, how do you feel after you stay up all night and you binge watch the third season of Lost in Space? It leaves you longing for the fourth season of Lost in Space. So what do we do with this? What do we do with the pleasures of life? There is value in the pleasures of life. There is enjoyment in the pleasures of life. And Solomon is saying, be taught by education. Be taught by pleasures. But then number three, be taught by death. Be taught by death. Death is the most significant event that any human being will experience. And it is, I believe, the most polarizing experience in life. We either think about it too much or we think about it too little. And some people have read this passage and said Solomon is just being cynical about death. He's just throwing up his hands and saying it is all that there is and we all die. But listen to what David Gibson says in his book, Living Life Backwards. He says, death can radically enable us to enjoy life. In fact, would you write that down? Death can actually radically enable us to enjoy life. How? Because if we will own the reality that we are going to die, that it may be after we've spent decades on this earth, it may be this week. If we can own the fact that we will all die, it informs how we prepare and live out life, doesn't it? It informs us. It educates us. It instructs us. So what does Solomon remind us about death? Well, look at verse 12. Life is set up to be on repeat. And it is. We simply repeat life. How many of you have grown up and looked in the mirror and said, man, I'm looking like my parents? How many of you have looked at the way you've reacted to your kids or the way that you've reacted in the workplace and said, ah, that's just like my dad or just like my mom? Now again, don't try to argue against Solomon and say, well, no, you know what? I have changed and I'm not like my parents. It's a general principle. And that is that life is on a repeat cycle. A second reminder that he gives us in verse 14 is that both the wise and the fool die. It's true, isn't it? Those that have been the most impactful in the world, those that have studied and passed on a legacy, guess what? They die. The town drunk, guess what? He or she dies. And so in verse 15, he asks what is a logical question. Then why live a wise life? But it is only a logical question if all we are doing is evaluating life in light of being under the sun. Verse 13, he says, there's no remembrance after we die. And we've already talked about this. And you might say, well, yes, there is remembrance of especially famous people. But even in that, our remembrance is based on what others have told us. Our remembrance is based on what Wikipedia has on it. We never truly know or truly understand the life of those who have lived before us. What is his conclusion? Verse 17, he hated life under the sun. Verse 14, he says that all that we amass in our lives, we leave for others. All of the wisdom, all of the education, all of the toil, all of the labor, all of the sweat, all that we apply to gain in this life is left for others when we draw our last breath. Which, by the way, isn't it interesting how the generation who goes after us works through our junk drawer? Things that we choose to keep for a reason that are meaningful to us. In fact, I've got a box downstairs in our basement from my grandpa Bud. He fought in World War II, and in that he's got a little box of all of these medals that he won. Things that he chose to keep because they were important to him, but I don't know what they were for. I wasn't there to experience what he experienced. Solomon is saying this is the reality of life because there is the absolute truth of death. Verse 19. He says, what we leave to others, they may either handle it wisely, they may handle it foolishly. We don't know. And so much of what we do as parents is trying to leave something for our kids, isn't it? But yet, even in that, just think of the emptiness that is for us. We don't know whether they'll use it wisely. We don't know whether they'll use it foolishly. We don't know whether somebody will come along and cheat them out of it. We don't know. Will it teach them work ethics? Will it not? We don't know. And we won't be around to see it. At a minimum, friends, listen to this. This is true. Whoever gets what we leave for them will have never expended the amount of sweat and toil and effort and education that we expended to gain it. Do you see the point that Solomon is making? This is true. Verse 23, his conclusion that is that it is vexation and sorrow. This is pain and just seemingly emptiness. Verse 17 and 18, he says that he hates this reality. Verse 20, he says that he moves to a point of despair, throwing up his hands and saying, it's no use. But friend, what he's doing for you and for me is he's educating us. And he's saying, when we get to a place in our lives that we understand this, that we don't fight against this, that we don't look to find a loophole, that maybe our situation will be different, and we just come to a conclusion that this is true, this actually educates us. It actually relativizes everything that we're doing in this life and moves it to a place where it should be. When we understand this truth about death, it will educate how we live this life. And the world gets to almost the point where Solomon does, doesn't it? When Kobe Bryant died, I saw some posts of my friends on Facebook that were something like this: make sure that before you leave in the morning, hug your kids and kiss your wife. What are they trying to do? They're taking the death of Kobe Bryant and educating our life. Take advantage of the moment. Maybe you've heard statements like this, and no one on their deathbed ever says, drawing their last breath, I wish I spent more time in the office. See, the point I'm making is that all humans will try to grasp this reality and understand that death is real and it should inform our lives. And we need to be educated by it. This is what Solomon is attempting to teach. We need to be educated and taught by education. We need to be taught by pleasures. We need to be taught by death. But there's a conclusion to the matter. And that's the end of our outline sentence. We need to be taught by all of these realities in life to enjoy life. To enjoy life. And I know that may sound like Solomon and I are speaking out of both sides of our mouth, but let Solomon draw this to a conclusion. He says in verse 24, there is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in this toil. And I don't know about you, but that sounds like that's contradictory. Solomon is saying at the end of the day, there's nothing greater that we have in life than to work and to labor and to get education and find enjoyment in it. That sounds contradictory. Maybe you've heard people who live by the philosophy of eat, drink, and be merry because tomorrow we might die. And what they're saying in that is, hey, just enjoy what you can today because there's no guarantee of tomorrow, and that falls woefully short. Look at the next phrase that Solomon gives us, and this educates us. He says, this also I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or can have enjoyment? This is the point. Listen to what David Gibson says. We must eat, drink, and find enjoyment for the purpose it was intended to provide and nothing further. Let me read that again. We must eat and drink and find enjoyment for the purpose it was intended to provide and nothing further. If that is our perspective, then we are having the perspective God wants us to have for what we experience under the sun. Then Solomon provides two contrasts. Verse 25 or 26, for to the one who pleases him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. Underline that phrase, and joy. See, Solomon sought wisdom and knowledge through education. He sought wisdom and knowledge through pleasures. He sought wisdom and knowledge by reflecting on death. But what he came to the conclusion by is that if he views all of these things through the perspective of God's giving them, then he can enjoy them. The contrast is found in verse 27, but to the sinner, meaning the person who does not view life through the perspective that God has given, it says God has given that person the busyness of gathering and collecting. It's the hamster wheel of experiencing life today, finding out it doesn't satisfy, and trying to one-up it tomorrow. And it's the hamster wheel of effort, 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 and never getting anywhere. That's the point Solomon's been making. There's no gain to be had by that perspective. There is nothing left over after that perspective. There's nothing lasting. There's nothing of substance. If that is your perspective, just try to one up tomorrow. Try to one up tomorrow. Try to one up with the experiences. He's saying if we have the perspective of God, we can find true enjoyment. What is the perspective of God? It's the perspective of the gospel. Write down Matthew chapter 6, verse 25 through 33. I believe this is what Jesus was teaching on the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus, having the mass of people sitting there listening to him, was instructing them on having kingdom lenses. Think about the kingdom more than the here and now. Think about the here and now in light of the kingdom. And kingdom perspective helps us understand that God provides our daily needs, that we have food, clothing, and shelter. That is provided by our God. We do not need to long for anything more. And in those basic necessities that God provides, there is enjoyment to be had. And James echoes this in James 1:17. He says that every good and perfect gift is from God. I got to experience this last week. I have to be honest with you. I am not a rabbit food kind of guy. I like meat. I like pizza, especially deep dish. I mean, if I'm going to make a choice on what to eat, that is what I'm going to choose to eat. But this 45-year-old body doesn't digest the same way it did back when I was 15. So I have to be more careful about what I eat. And so I came home on Thursday, having just studied this text, and I looked at the lettuce leaves that I was cutting to make a salad, and I started feeling the texture of a lettuce leaf. I started looking at the green and the gradient of how it's almost white down at the stem, and then it gets lighter, it gets green, and then it gets dark, and just amazed at the colors of lettuce. I put some turkey sausage on there and sprinkled some gluten-free, I guess Caesar salad is gluten-free, but Caesar salad dressing, and as I tasted that and experienced the crunchiness of the texture and the contrast of the salad dressing and the tastelessness of the lettuce and the turkey. So you see what's happening is all of a sudden this salad was becoming something of a worship experience. All of a sudden, I'm actually pointing from the experience of the created to the creator, and there was actually the best salad I had had in a long time. And I wasn't worried about, man, I wish this was pizza. I wasn't worried about, will this last and fulfill my hunger forever? I was focused in that moment to enjoy what God had given me for the purpose it was intended to provide. Listen to what David Gibson says. He says, God does not make the meaningless go away. The gift of God is that he makes the meaningless enjoyable. Beloved, that's the point of Ecclesiastes. It's empty. It's Hebel. It does not satisfy. It does not last. And yet, in that smoke, in that momentary experience, there is enjoyment to be had for the purpose it was intended to provide. And what God has given us is education and pleasures in life and the reality of knowing that we will die to let us have perspective and enjoy things for what they were intended to be, not for what we think we need them to be. Beloved, that is the point of Ecclesiastes, and that point pierces the dark clouds of the weight of the question. There's got to be something more, hasn't there? I want to invite you to bow your heads and close your eyes, because we want to take this education from this passage and apply it to our lives. It's not just enough to understand these verses more accurately. It's not intended to simply disseminate information so that our knowledge can grow. What we need to do is become wise with the information that we have gained and apply it to our lives. So, friend, where do you find yourself on this paradigm of education? Have you been looking to knowledge and education as though it will somehow satisfy, as though it will somehow find an ending point, that you will be able to exhaust the gaining of knowledge? Maybe you're pursuing pleasures in life for the purpose of some sort of experience of satisfaction that will somehow solve all, that will somehow last forever, that will somehow be the end-all, be-all. Maybe you're considering that the grass may be greener on the other side, that it may somehow provide for you what nothing else has provided. Maybe you look at the reality of death, and you see that reality, and it causes you to be in despair. It causes you to hate life. Friend, can you get to the place from what we have studied today that you can enjoy life for what it was intended to provide and nothing more? You see, friends, the only way we can truly do this is if we have been transformed by the gospel. The gospel gives us the lenses we need to be able to see and live this reality. The gospel, that is the good news of Jesus Christ. That God himself is holy and he expects perfection of his creation. That every one of us as his created humans have fallen short because of our sin nature. That we are justly condemned to hell as just punishment for our sin. But God, who is rich in mercy, has offered a way of escape. Through Jesus Christ, through his death, through his resurrection, through his place of victory at the right hand of God. And that if we believe in that, if we turn from our sins and ask his forgiveness, if we will surrender to Christ as our Lord, he will forgive us and save us and transform us. Have you ever come to that point in your life? If not, will you call out to him and ask him to forgive you? And will you surrender your life to him? Friends, for those of us who have been transformed by the gospel, may we put gospel lenses on as we look at education, as we look at the pleasures, as we look at the reality of death, and may those realities and that education inform us so that we can enjoy life for what it was intended to provide and nothing more. Father, I thank you for the wisdom of Solomon. I thank you that it rings true these thousands of years after it was written. I thank you that it is so practical that we can take what we have learned and apply it to our lives and actually help us see education, see pleasures, see death and this life in a way that allows us to enjoy it in the proper way.